a commonality that we see across the exercises and the teams is really about getting the team organized and keeping the team organized.
Welcome to the Prepared X podcast, your complete source for crisis, emergency, business continuity, and security preparedness interviews, news, and much more. Now, your host, he creates chaos for a living, Rob Burton.
That was a short outtake from my interview with Leanne Metz. Many of you know Leanne, as she has been working for Prepared X for almost 2 years now, and is part of our team that runs many of our exercises. And this interview that I did with Leanne, I think she was on the show maybe a couple of years ago, so it was great to have her back on. We got talking about some of the most common crisis management gaps that she noticed throughout 2018. We got talking about the crisis coordinator role, really important role. We spoke about the briefing cycle, activation of the team, all the tools that you can use to help manage that process, as well as the critical and other stakeholders that become part of your response, both from a communication and a coordination standpoint, as well as, of course, we spoke about exercises in some detail towards the end of the episode. And so without further ado, here's episode 59 and my interview with Leanne. Well, good morning, Leanne. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you, Rob?
I'm good. A little bit of snow here, and I believe you've got some icy conditions there in Indiana.
Yes, we do. It's rainy and icy and some slick roads. So I'm happy to be off the road and doing this podcast.
Well, that's good, and I think we're all ready for spring, although we probably have another good solid month of this nasty stuff, so hopefully we'll get through it. Well, thanks for joining us today, and for those of you, I think this is your second time on the podcast, might be third, I'm not sure, but for those of the audience that maybe not familiar with you, why don't you just provide them with a little bit of background, and we'll get going with the interview.
Sure. You know, my name is Leanne Metz, and I've been working in the business continuity space since about 2011. Started in business continuity when I was working for a company that was owned by Bristol Myers Squibb, and Bristol Myers spun the Mead Johnson Nutrition off as an independent company. And as an independent company, we needed our own business continuity program. So I was tasked with developing and implementing that program. And so I worked doing that for about the next 7 years, 6 or 7 years, putting that program in place. And one of the aspects of the program was putting a common crisis management program in place around the world. And so I left the company in 2017 and began working with the PreparedX team. And with the PreparedX team, we get to work with a number of companies in various industries and help to improve their crisis preparedness. So a lot of exercises, you know, a lot of education, and so really enjoying my work with PreparedX.
Well, thank you, and thanks for the plug there. We really enjoy having you on board, and we're pleased that you could take some time out today to do this podcast. So I know we tried to do this in January, and things got pushed back. We had a number of exercises and a number of other things going on, but you know, we wanted to look back over 2018 and try and get a synopsis from a crisis management perspective from the corporate space. And I think that's where we're going to focus our efforts today in terms of having a discussion. And so I'll start off with some of the most common gaps that you noticed throughout 2018, and maybe they've spilled over into 2019 as we're in, you know, the first quarter still here. So what was your experience last year based on the work that you did with regards to those gaps?
Yes, a commonality that we see across the exercises and the teams is really about getting the team organized and keeping the team organized. And it's really important to quickly get organized around the event. You know, as we know, there's a ton of information coming in. And so it's coming in from social media, it's coming in from eyewitnesses. And, you know, getting all of that information, getting it organized and sorting through it is really, really important. And organizing that team, it is a common gap. And we talk about this in many of our publications that we do and podcasts around a crisis coordinator, and that role can really help. And we'll talk a little bit more about that as well. But that's really common, is that organization piece.
A great, great. Yeah, I think, and it surprises certainly me when we start to talk about the, you know, the discipline and when you come together, you know, having that, you know, that environment that is like no other, you know, meeting that, you know, if you have organized meetings within your business, it should be no different, really. You know, it should be a matter of fact in terms of what's said in the in that particular meeting, because it's, you know, we're now talking about an event that could be potentially unfolding in front of us, or maybe an event that has already started. So it always amazes me that, you know, they seem to struggle with that piece, because they think of the word crisis and they think, you know, this has to be some way very different than really, you know, it's really just about being, like you said, being organized in those first few minutes.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, sometimes that word crisis just kind of changes behaviors very quickly. So people who might be the best leader in day-to-day business operations falls apart when they declare a crisis or believe there's a crisis. So really having that planned in advance as to how you will get organized really helps to alleviate some of that chaos.
Sure, sure. And so what's the recommended action then in order to close this particular gap?
Well, I think, first of all, you need to appoint someone to help organize the team. We talk about that role and call it a crisis coordinator. I've seen this in practice around the world. It is very helpful, very valued, and it's really around appointing someone. You can call them whatever you want, but they're responsible for getting that team organized and beginning to organize that information and help sort through that. So that's really important to have someone focused on that. Many crisis teams have functional representatives that are there from finance, security, PR, whatever department that it is, and they're representing their function and their activities. So having someone who's really focused and prioritizing the organization piece really helps that team come together and be effective more quickly.
Sure.
Another action would be to have this briefing cycle discipline. So a briefing cycle is when you bring the team together, you give an update on what's happened. Maybe it's what's happened since your last briefing cycle. And you plan the briefing cycles in a logical way. If you have to brief a senior leadership team, you need to have your team's briefing cycle fairly close before you're going to brief that leadership team. That way you have the most current information. You may have a team on the ground who's managing the event. So, you know, get them involved in the briefing cycle, set that cadence, and let everybody go work and manage the crisis versus being on a call with 60 or 70 people on the call. So planning and scheduling those in a logical sequence is really important. And guess what? That crisis coordinator can help to do that. You can have crisis coordinators at the various team levels that work together to help organize that. And that's a good practice as well.
Sure. That makes a lot of sense.
And then, absolutely. And then practicing this. So this discipline will come through practicing it. So perhaps you have an event that might be a crisis. You know, get into this rhythm, get into this flow and practice this discipline and process, even though you may have not declared it a crisis, because when you do have one, you will be better because you've practiced it and the team understands it and comes together and gets into the flow much more quickly.
Great. So let's talk about a few other common gaps with regards to you know, crisis management teams and the organization of those gaps. You know, I think three that we've identified here, one is activation of the team. Can you talk about that for a few minutes?
Yeah, so we see this as well, is that the team says, well, we're going to get together. We're going to get the team together. And, you know, how are you going to do that?
Right.
You need to define that exactly. Define it in advance and practice it. Some teams use technology such as an emergency notification system. You need to periodically test that to make sure that the team has the most recent contact information in there. You may have had someone, you know, leave or join the team, so making sure that you have the right people on that list. So if you're using technology, you need to test it. Some people say, well, we'll just text everyone. Again, test it. Make sure that your group organization is up to date. You also need to be careful about what you say in the text message, because either text or even using an emergency notification system, that information becomes public as soon as you press the send button.
Sure, yeah.
And so the last thing you want to do is to send a public notice out that you have an actual or potential crisis, and put something in that text about it. You know, we've had a fire, we've had an explosion, or we have a product quality issue. You don't want to put any of that in your message. So what we suggest is having some sort of a code in advance that everyone understands and knows what it is. So it could be, we have a yellow call at 2 o'clock.
Yep.
And then the crisis team knows that there's something simmering out there. They know to drop what they're doing now and to get on that call at 2 o'clock to understand what the situation is.
Yes.
So that's always a good practice as well.
Yeah, I think.
And then also.
Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. I was just going to kind of move into the next thing about physically getting the team together.
Yeah, well, one of the struggles that always amazes me is, it's almost like a leadership issue, and that is, who takes responsibility for that? They seem to struggle. And, we've seen this where teams have looked around the room and, they're all very good communicators in day-to-day, and all of a sudden it's like it gets serious, and now it's like, well, who's responsible? And it's almost like, people don't want the responsibility, and I think that comes down to trust within the organization, within the crisis management organization, somebody needs to take responsibility for that, because that's the first step in coming together. Before you even get yourselves organized, we've got to make sure that we can coordinate and make that call. And I think they think it's very different from day-to-day business. They can communicate very well day-to-day, and then all of a sudden, there's a potential for a high-pressured situation, and things don't get off to a good start because of the activation.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And, we also sometimes see reluctance about activating the team. I don't want to call the team together because then people will think we have a crisis.
You're
well,
right.
Guess what?
Yeah. Yeah.
You have something out there that may become a crisis. So pull the team together, evaluate the situation, and, don't hesitate to pull the team together. That doesn't mean you have to go into full-blown reaction mode to the crisis.
Right.
But, by pulling the team together, you get a more comprehensive understanding of the situation.
Yep.
Because everyone's going to have different concerns based on their background and experience and, functional expertise. They may think of something you haven't considered.
Yep.
And so always good to bring the team together, brief them so that they're aware of what's going on, and also as the leader, help you more comprehensively understand what's going on.
Sure, sure. And did you have one other item for the activation, or did we cover that?
No, well, the other item is really just around physically, the logistics around it.
Oh, yeah,
so
yep.
Really understanding where are you going to go? So
right.
I get a text message that says, yellow meeting at 2 o'clock. Where do I go? I need to know where that is in advance. I need to know I'm going to the third floor, to the corner office or that thing, or wherever it might be. And wherever that's identified, have some materials there. Have your crisis plan there. Have some notebooks and pens there. you know, just have some materials there so that when the team comes together, they're ready to take action as quickly as possible.
Sure, and that may be a phone call as well, though, Leanne. I think some organization, we always advocate if a team, as small as it may be initially, can get across the table from each other, great things happen. But organizations often, you know, in this digital world, and they may be separated physically. What do you say about those phone lines where people call into? What's your take on those 1-800 numbers that we dial into as a team?
Well, there's some technology that works very nicely within the emergency notification system space where you can actually initiate a bridge call right away. So that's a nice technology. You just is like press one to join the bridge, so you have everyone on immediately. But you also need to identify a backup. That ENS system might not be working, or the bridge functionality may not be. So having people understand, if it's a conference call, what's that number? How do I join that call? Is it through the ENS? Is it a separate number? How do I quickly get on that call?
Yep.
And, you know, my counsel is, technology is great, but you have to define your process first.
Sure.
So defining the process of how you're going to assemble the team and providing that guidance to the team is really, really important. And don't completely rely on the technology,
right,
because it may not be working. Right. So just making sure that that you give the guidance to everyone in advance, and guess what? Practice it.
Right. Yep. Yeah. Something that seems to be missing. So let's move on and talk about, the next, component, if you will. And that would be, part of the organizing. We've activated the team. We're starting to, walk in the room or get on the phone line, whatever it may be. Let's talk about some of the tools that may help us as responders or planners within the crisis team. What kind of tools would benefit the team?
One of the first tools that I suggest is what I call the initial assessment. So this would be used when you bring the team together for that first meeting and you start to try to understand what's happened, what do we know, who's on the scene, what do we need to know, and then the next question is by when. You can't find out everything right away. So it's about prioritizing what do we need to know at this time versus what are we going to find out in the next hour, 2 hours, tomorrow, et cetera.
Yep.
The initial assessment can be, it can be a checklist that you can develop in advance, and that's helpful to help thoroughly evaluate the situation. So having those questions, like I said, who's on the scene? Is media on the scene? Just walking through sort of that list of understanding so that you pull that team together and make them as efficient as possible in that first meeting. So that can be something that can be very helpful. We also advocate using a master events log. And I always say just the facts. So listing what's happened, the sequence of events that have occurred, what time they occurred, where they occurred. Was it in the newspaper? Was it on television? Was it in the, in the break room? What happened? So listing those events as they occurred. The master events log not only helps the team understand what's going on, but sometimes as events unfold, you start to bring other resources in, either from internal or external.
Sure.
And having that log, yes, absolutely. So having that log helps you onboard those additional resources very quickly. You know, it's either on the wall or projected on a screen or even written down, and you can hand them that. They can read that and are up to speed very quickly. So that's another tool that works well and helps keep the team organized. We talked about managing that myriad of information. This is one that helps keep that organized as it comes in.
And just before we move on from the master events log, that's also, rather than, you can use some data from within there to send reports up the chain if you need to, or wherever else you need to, because, they are the facts. So I guess you could use that as a resource as well as you start to go through to get other team members up to speed, but also to be able to brief other areas of the business if you've got a senior team that you need to brief as well. So there can be content that you don't need to, you know, reinvent the wheel, so to speak. You've got all the details there, and that can be utilized for that as well.
Yes. That's a great point. And the next point is around the briefing cycle. So having a template that helps you plan that, I suggest having who needs to be there and having that list there. And then when you're documenting that briefing cycle, you can just check off who's there. And typically it will be most of the same people at the next one. So you can just reuse that template and keep modifying it. But having that template, the master events log can just be attached to it or copied and pasted into it, you know, however you want to do that. But leveraging that information for the briefing cycle will help keep you from reinventing something new or redocumenting. Anytime you redocument, you run the risk of now having different information or conflicting information that can confuse people.
Sure. And also, can you just touch on the cadence of the briefings? I know we're talking about documents here, but I think it's important that we mention the organization, the crisis coordinators, are coordinating with those other teams that would probably be meeting also, right?
Yes, absolutely. So that crisis coordinator can take a step back and think about what's the logical sequence for having briefing cycles. So if you have an incident management team who's on the ground and they're managing it, first they would want to brief the next level, perhaps the crisis team. Once the crisis team receives that update from the incident management team, they can update senior management. And then the next briefing might be senior management to the board.
Right.
So thinking through that logical sequence and planning those is really, really important to make sure that you're giving people the most relevant and current information or direction.
Yes.
Sometimes the teams are looking for direction from one of the other teams.
Yep.
So making sure that that's planned versus just letting it happen on an ad hoc basis.
Yeah. And that becomes challenging for, you know, certainly we've seen leaders that, always will obviously want to make decisions as quickly as possible. And, you know, so I think setting those expectations from what we've seen early on, so informing that, you know, the senior leaders will get a briefing, and if you tell them you're briefing them at 1100 hours and your briefing is at 1045 hours, you may not be able to brief them at 11. So, you know, make sure there's a little gap between so you can get yourself organized, but making sure that they understand that they will receive a briefing and that you'll obviously be there to brief them, and otherwise they'll certainly be calling you back. So I think setting expectations is something that we talk about as well.
Absolutely. Yes, and that helps the team go off and do their work without receiving all of these phone calls or texts or emails from people wanting to know what's going on.
Sure.
So, and once you get in the habit of that, you know, it works quite well.
Okay, what's the next document?
Really around this one. Well, this one is what I call the incident action plan. It's typically referred to as that. You can call it whatever you want, but it's really who's doing what by when. And, you know, it's interesting to see that the teams we work with, we often see them, they all know what they need to do. And they're all talking about what they need to do, but it's really important to document it because what if you're not there? What if you're on a Caribbean cruise and you can't be reached via phone and your backup's there? They may not have the same level of knowledge that you have. So documenting those incident action plans is really important. You can have some templated plans for some potential high probability events that you have. And then you can pull those out. It's a great place to start. Or you can start from just a white sheet of paper, whatever works for the team. But document the actions that the team needs to take, identify who's responsible, and then integrate that into an overall plan. And again, that can feed back into your briefing cycle. You can give some updates based on what's going on in your incident action plan.
Sure.
But, yes. And then, so the final one I was going to talk about is a sit rep or a situation report. So this is very typical in both the military and in government, and they do a great job of it. And there's examples. You can Google SITREP, and I think there's examples on the FEMA website. But again, this can help drive that situational awareness on what's going on. So there are typically a number of SITREPs that are issued throughout the life cycle. They may be more frequent in the early part and then be delayed or longer periods toward the end. So it's really just about what's the current situation. And it's some of the information we talked about. Who's on site? You know, what first responders are here? What's happened since we last updated you? So that's also a helpful report. So we talked about a number of tools here, and sometimes it can be overwhelming to think I have to do all of this documentation and all of these tools. So pick one and start using it and get comfortable with it, and then move on. You can move on and add another one to your toolkit. So don't try to do it all at once, but pick one or two, start using those, and then continue to add to the team's toolkit and management of the information.
Yeah, great point. Thank you. So so let's talk about the final piece in this particular question then, and that's those stakeholders that are either critical or certainly at some way or at some point throughout the life cycle of the emergency would become part of needing to be communicated with or coordinated with as it relates to the emergency.
Yes, so it's really around stakeholders. We get things done via relationships, so it's really important to understand who those stakeholders are, both people who are dependent on me and people that I'm dependent on for either information or services. And so having that identified in advance is really important because, again, once a crisis hits, you don't act like you do in your normal day-to-day operations. So having that list and having it documented, so not only I have it, but guess what? I'm on that cruise. I'm not here.
Right.
So someone needs to be able to look at my key stakeholders and be able to contact them so that it's not just in my cell phone. Everybody has accessibility to that. So just making sure that you have that. And, you can develop that by function. So if I'm a supply chain or facilities manager, I have a very different list of stakeholders than someone in finance. So I have my stakeholder register. It's stored where everyone can get it, and that crisis coordinator person role can facilitate that and probably once a quarter or semi-annually say, hey, here's your stakeholder list. Is this up to date? Does anything need to change? And then, again, sharing that by the team in case, the primary person is not available.
Sure.
They may be a part of the crisis.
Right.
Yeah, so really important stakeholders.
Okay, so let's talk about exercises as it's our passion. It's what we spend most of our day doing in terms of preparing for them and delivering them and evaluating them and everything in between those items. So in your opinion, are we going to see more exercises throughout 2019? Or should we see more exercises throughout 2019? And if so, why is that?
Well, I think that, we're an environment, we're a culture now where we're much more aware of risk. So absolutely companies must be ready for a crisis. And they're going to come at you from lots of different ways. There's lots of opportunities. So I think we'll definitely see an increase in crisis management exercises because of the benefits for the company being prepared for those. There was, cyber, as we know, is growing probably every day. We see a cyber issue out there.
Yep.
Workplace violence. Yeah. Workplace violence, particularly in the U.S.
Yep.
There's those are on the uprise too. We looked at some FBI data recently, and it's staggering, the increase in workplace violence events.
Yeah, and I think that's weather. we typically, when we do those scenarios, just you know, thinking about workplace violence, I think we're seeing a lot of different types of workplace violence scenarios now. It's not just active shooter, which was a common term that was used for many years, and in the last, certainly in what I can remember, the last 3 or 4 years. We're really using the word violence because it can be, any act of violence that could impact the operation of the organization.
Yes, absolutely. It doesn't always have to be someone coming in wielding a gun, as we know.
Right.
Yes, and we've also seen tremendous events occur because of weather over the last few years.
Yeah.
A multitude of very, very significant hurricanes and flooding, tornadoes, et cetera. So, you have to be prepared from a business perspective as what if that impacts your operations, either your facility or your people. How are you going to respond to that? How are you going to account for those people? That's also seeing a lot of that. And, social media, if you're not ready as a company to deal with what's going to be on social media, you're missing the boat because it's there and things go viral very quickly. And so really important to practice that. As we do in the exercises, we have tweets and we have Facebook posts. So how are you monitoring those and how are you going to respond? So are you going to keep your Facebook up or are you going to take it down? Are you going to allow people to post or are you not? All of those decisions should be thought about in advance instead of waiting until you have thousands of negative posts on your Facebook.
Sure.
And then, I think that we see the benefit of these companies coming together and practicing. And, sometimes it can prevent, by being prepared and understanding what actions you're going to take, you might be able to prevent an event, a simmering event, from becoming a full-blown crisis. So that early intervention is what I call it. Act as if it's a crisis and you might keep it from getting big.
That certainly makes a lot of sense. The process of exercising just puts the team in that environment to think about scenarios and walk through the steps of how things may unfold. And like you said, they may identify during those discussions and during those planning meetings, as they start to plan out, they may say, well, actually, that's already happening, or this is actually bubbling. And we can intervene, as you mentioned here, or you just mentioned, earlier, so we can prevent that from happening, or maybe we can't prevent it from happening, but at least we can have measures in place to reduce our exposure.
Yes, absolutely. And I've seen this in practice. There are times that gaps have been identified that have been closed, that they weren't aware that they existed until they had the exercise, and then they've closed that gap. So it may prevent something from happening down the road. So really critical to understand that in advance.
Sure.
And then this is feedback we hear all the time, is really about understanding what other people do. I didn't know you did that, or I didn't know you needed this information. So getting that team together gives them a better understanding of what the person across the table does from them.
Sure.
And at times, that's the first time they've met. How many times do we talk about, how many people are shaking hands and saying it's nice to meet you, although they're on a crisis team together?
Right.
So, yes, oftentimes we let this our digital world kind of rule, and we're in office on a different floor or at a different location, and we don't take that time to do the face to face. So there's a real benefit, in doing that.
Right.
So I think, just to summarize, the benefits of doing a crisis management exercise are numerous, and a company will reap the rewards for pulling the team together and taking the time to do it.
Yeah, and I think, leading into this, as we start to wrap up here, leading into this last question, I think, that kind of, dovetails straight into it. And I think some organizations are just concerned about, conducting one for the first time. But, if they do it right the first time, they'll understand and see the benefits. And then they typically will then get buy-in from, you know, those leaders and other areas of the business where they need to get buy-in for, you know, future exercises. That's certainly something that we see. So what would you advise those organizations that might be new to conducting exercises?
Seek help. Look inside your organization. There are a number of people in your organization who might have some experience with this. Typically, your corporate security team has done exercises, maybe a little bit different focus, but, you know, definitely experience that can help you. Within IT, they've done exercises with disaster recovery or perhaps a cyber event. You know, leverage their expertise, your environmental health and safety, et cetera. And then obviously consultants, you know, that's what we do is we come in and we help organizations to develop and deliver those exercises. But, you know, you also have lots of resources that you can pull from within. So get them on board, get their help, and help get this buy-in from management on doing the exercises. You know, don't think it's all on you. If you're new into the program, you've just been assigned to do a crisis exercise for your organization, make sure you look everywhere you can and pull from the various resources. And, you know, my next advice would be train the team first. Spend some time training the team. Don't just pull them in for an exercise first, but spend some time training them. So what processes have you put in place around team activation? What tools, et cetera? So make sure that they're comfortable with those before you do the exercise. Yeah. We see a lot of times people come in and they're not familiar with those things. Yeah. And then, you know, start small. You know, don't think you're going to have a full day, you know, cross-functional exercise the first time you do one. So have that tabletop. Get people around the room. Get them at a table and start talking through a scenario. You know, keep it short, maybe a half day, 3 to 4 hours for that first one. And then, you know, then you can build from there. You can continue to challenge them. You can have cross-team exercises where you have that incident management team and the crisis team together. But build that, put that plan in place so that you grow that team over time. Don't expect them to run before they can walk.
Sure. Makes sense. Yep.
Yeah. And then, you know, what concerns them? Have that scenario that they can really get into. What keeps you up at night? You know, what are some of the most highest risks that we have as a company? Let's practice for the event that happens. Let's be prepared for that. So having that relevant scenario. And then, you know, finally around making sure that you have aligned objectives. You know, with the leadership team or the crisis team, why are we doing this exercise? Is it to test our plan? Is it to test our plan as integrated with another plan? Making sure that's really clear so that when the team comes in, that they understand what that is and that they understand why they're there. And that you design the exercise, you know, to meet those objectives, to test against those objectives. And just, you know, getting people to the table. You know, making sure that you have the resources at the exercise that you need, because, you know, not having a key functional representative there can sort of derail it. You know, if they're critical to this scenario,
sure,
and you don't have that information or that representation there, they can derail it. That can derail it. So making sure that you have the right people and the right expertise in the room is also really, really important.
And then, what else in terms of the exercise then, in terms of, you know, conducting that, you know, that exercise, what's the ultimate goal, I guess?
You know, the ultimate goal is to learn and be better. Yep. So making sure that you, what did we learn? So spending time at the end of the exercise to talk about that. What did we learn? What am I going to do now that I've experienced this? What am I going to tell my team?
Yep.
What am I going to change? Oh, I'm going to update the roster, whatever it might be, making sure that you learn and then sharing those learnings. So sometimes there are different crisis teams throughout a large organization. So sharing those learnings across the organization is important, and making sure that that you implement those learnings or that you remediate those.
Right.
So that's really critical. Just because you learned them doesn't mean they're fixed.
Sure.
As we talked about,
lessons to be learned, right? Yep.
Yes, absolutely. So yeah. Oftentimes we see the same lessons learned time after time. So making sure that those are remediated is really important.
Yep. Yep. Excellent. Any final comments or points before we start to wrap up?
Nothing other than what we've talked about. I think, sometimes when you look at developing a crisis exercise program, it can be a bit overwhelming. So really just starting with the basics, starting small, you learning as a crisis lead, you learning from the exercises, how do I do the next one better? And then just continuing to grow that program is really important. And obviously implementing those lessons to be learned to continue to get buy-in and support for your crisis exercise program.
Fantastic, fantastic. So for our listeners, Leanne, obviously they can find you through the PreparedX network, but if they want to reach out to you directly or via any of the social media, how would they start to communicate with you?
I'm on both Twitter and LinkedIn and would love to connect with anyone who would like to. As Rob mentioned, you can find me on the PreparedX webpage and my email's there, so feel free to reach out.
Excellent. Well, appreciate your time today, Leanne, and we'll be in touch very soon.
Great. Thanks, Rob.
Yeah, take care. That's it for episode 59 of the PreparedX podcast. We just love your feedback. Please go to iTunes, go to wherever you're listening to this podcast, and please provide us with your comments. What do you want more of? Do you like it? Do you not like it? We just love the feedback. If you're listening via our website, then there's a place at the bottom of the podcast where you're listening. Shoot us a message and let us know how you found this particular podcast, if you liked it. If you want more of a specific subject, we'd love to hear from you. So again, thanks for listening today, and we'll be in touch soon. Thank you.